And welcome to Lindley Evans Music Studio at the ABC in Ultimo for another edition of Thank God It's Friday. I'm Richard Glover, and this week, country singer Adam Brand. Please welcome him. And our panel, Tom Ballard, Anthony Aykroyd, and Tommy Dean. But first, as usual, here is the news from nowhere. There's a famous scene in Huckleberry Finn where Huck comes to town dressed as a young girl. He's on the bludge for food, but the woman of the household is onto him. She sets a series of traps to check if he is really a girl, at one point throwing an object into Huck's lap. Instinctively, he clamps his knees together to catch it, rather than spreading his knees, as one might do if one was used to wearing a dress. The woman shouts in triumph. The imposter is unmasked. Now, we now know that she should have instead invited Huck to take a shower. Whether he was clothed or not, the truth would have been revealed. Research just out claims men have showers facing the nozzle while women shower with their back to the nozzle. Why would this be? Various suggestions have been made, including height differences, the need for women to keep their hair dry, and even the sensitivity of a woman's chest puppies when exposed to a vigorous water flow. Not one explanation, ladies and gentlemen, seems to fully explain the difference. It is often claimed there are big behavioural differences between men and women. Women, it is said, know how to talk about feelings, while men just get competitive with each other. You'll have a couple over to dinner, and the women will be in the kitchen giving each other a 20-point psychiatric examination, while the blokes are outside on the verandas comparing the size of their decks. Now, I hate stereotypes, even though, or perhaps mostly because, they sometimes have a hint of truth. There are times, I must confess, when Jocasta and I have driven home from dinner with friends. Gee, Tim seems well, I'll say. At which point, Jocasta will patiently explain that Tim has spent the last 3 months in a psychiatric hospital being treated for endogenous depression and loss of self-esteem following his retrenchment after 20 years in the same company. Tim and I didn't get around to talking about that sort of stuff. We were too busy admiring the size of each other's decks. Such sweeping generalisations are all very well, but there's something more intriguing about the shower research. These tiny differences in behaviour lack any easy explanation. I've asked around, and there are a few others to report. Now, take a minute right now to check your fingernails. Go on, check them now. Men, typically, will curl their hand and glance downwards at their nails. Women typically will extend their hand outwards as if asking someone to stop and glance at their nails that way. Now, if you're standing, check the bottom of your shoe for chewing gum. If you're a man, you'll typically bring your foot forward, resting it on your knee. A woman will instead lift her foot backwards and swivel her head to see if there's a problem. Next, pull off your jumper. If male, you'll do this by grabbing the area behind your neck and pulling it forward. If female, by crossing your arms in front of your body, seizing the bottom of the jumper and moving it upwards. Now, if you don't mind, ladies and gentlemen, remove the rest of your clothing at this point. Now, this radio show is getting more interactive by the moment. If you're a man, you'll remove your shirt first, leaving on your pants. Yes, as that gentleman's done. Exactly. A woman will start with her skirt or pants. If you're male, you'll never leave your socks until last, while a woman will happily leave them on. Now next, hop into bed. Trust me, I'm a journalist. The man will whip aside the doona, sit on the bed, then swing his legs in, while the woman will kneel on the bed first before swinging herself around and in. Now next, have sex. Now remember, this is for research and is therefore tax deductible. Make notes afterwards, and if male, brag about it to your friends. After the sex, go to a barbecue and try all these gender tests on your friends. Now, I've tested them out on quite a few people and found they work about 60% of the time. One male friend showers in the approved manner, but checks his nails like a girl. A female friend is perfectly adept at her sweater work, hands lifting upwards, but enjoys a hot and steaming masculine shower every day. My chest puppies can take it, she says, her pride obvious. All in all, it's a great party game. Nearly everyone is left with a delicious sense of sexual ambiguity. that, at least partly, they are paid-up members of the opposite sex. Such a feeling of sexual transgression and abandon can be hard to achieve at the average suburban barbecue, but with the help of these simple tests, you could achieve it tonight. And that's news from nowhere. Please welcome the sexually ambiguous Tom Ballard, Anthony Aykroyd and Tommy Dean. Welcome.
Thank you. I don't think there's any ambiguity at all. According to that test, I am 100% woman.
You shower backwards, check your nails up.
Shower backwards, that's a long hair thing. Maybe it's a long hair thing. You shower backwards, let the, everything run off the back instead of conditioner and shampoo down
your
face.
Did you look at your hair?
I look at my nail up. Yeah. I look at my nail up. The sweater from below. I think the only place I may have manliness is in the getting into bed.
Right.
And that, I think, is more based on absolutely no balance. I tend to just start to tip towards the bed and then fall in all at once.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mrs. Tommy
Dean. Thank you.
But I have a manly Aykroyd and a manly Ballard.
I didn't even understand the female getting into bed thing.
You kneel on the bed, apparently.
Kneel on the bed.
You kneel on the bed.
Then what?
Then you sort of swing your bottom down and lie, sort of as if the bed was a chaise lounge and you were Cleopatra.
Sounds like they're kind of like kneading it with their nails like a cat. I don't know what they're doing.
They do none of these things in barrel, don't worry. Now, let's check you understand this week's news. Who told Cinderella it was time to drink up?
Cinderella, drink up. Well, Cinderella, 12 o'clock.
Cinderella, midnight is
drink
crucial.
Drink up, King's Cross, Barry O'Farrell.
Exactly.
Yes. Barry's, what's he saying? You can't have double shots after midnight?
Yeah, well, shots at all, double serves, more than four drinks in an order, and you can't have glassware. You've got to have plastic after the witching hour, which is midnight.
Yeah, right. Mm. And the reasonable idea is I have better ideas about how to solve the drinking thing. And excessive drinking, inspired actually, strangely enough, by looking at, I left the jar open of honey, and there was a pool of ants in there just floating face down, and they seem really happy. You know, they died doing what they love. And I thought, why not a nightclub in King's Cross, Olympic pool full of Bundy and Coke, and all the yobbos can float face down and... Yeah, at the end of the day, we fish them out with a fishing net and harvest their organs.
I think it already happened.
From the livers.
It's called the bourbon and beefsteak. It already exists. It's been done.
I understand the concern they're having. Midnight seems curiously early in a modern city. Plastic seems environmentally unfriendly. Four drinks is two doubles, as far as I can tell. You haven't really. There's lots of loopholes that can be applied here. If you have, you know, three mates at four drinks each, you've got 12 more drinks at midnight, and I don't think you've solved any problem.
And there's the other thing people say, there's no public transport. So, you know, I mentioned Cinderella, but oh, for Cinderella's little, transport home.
Well, it's ironic, actually, you mentioned with the Cinderella thing, because Cinderella's coach turned into a pumpkin at midnight, and actually the complexion of many girls at King's Cross, quite similar to the pumpkin. But I live near King's Cross.
Barry O'Farrell's already turned into a pumpkin.
Maybe. I live really close to King's Cross, and I think it's all very well to introduce initiatives to get, you know, sort out drunken violence, that kind of stuff. I'm just worried, what are we doing about the camera crews in King's Cross? Like, I don't mind the drug addicts and the prostitutes, but I'll be damned if I have my kids being influenced by Channel 7 reporters. It's not on.
Remove this scourge from our streets. Now, who declared this week that while the boats couldn't be turned back, the clocks could be?
Ah, easy. That's Julia Gillard.
Yep. Julio?
Julia Gillard from the Liberal Party. Josh likes that one. Josh is in the audience, ladies and gentlemen. But I think this is, Julia Gillard has now become John Howard, and John Howard is... This is like one of those body swap movies. You know, Julia's going to wake up and she'll look in the mirror and she'll think, gee, I'm a myopic dwarf.
With hairy eyebrows.
I'm bad at cricket. There's no use plucking those things. And Johnny will wake up having sex with some guy called Tim. Get off, Tim. I will decide who comes within my borders. And the circumstances under which they come. But if I call out the name Alexander, just go with it.
Or George W. Bush, more likely, I think.
I think Labor's been kind of criticised unfairly, you know, with this whole thing with these arm seekers this week, because I just think they've been getting the Olympic spirit and they want to show how good they are at backflips. I think that's what they want to do. Oh, come on, really?
Really? I think Julia basically said, we will determine the moment of our backflip and the circumstances in which we will perform it.
Did she say that?
No.
Because that would have been refreshingly honest. I would have been very excited.
You were just surprised that Richard made a joke.
No, I thought that would have been cool.
That took you by surprise.
If they admitted it. This sounds like a political issue, and as such, I'm not aware of it. I have no idea.
Well, let me try this one on you. Who is in desperate need this week of a place to have a leak?
Leak wiki.
Leak wiki.
Gotta be.
Julian
Assange.
What is this new flavor you're bringing to the show?
I'm just channeling someone from Ecuador.
We're all moving to Ecuador.
It's interesting. Julian Assange is actually the first IT enthusiast in history who wants to come out of his room, which is really interesting. I say good on him. Get out there. See the sights, Julian. Have some fun. You're turning pale, mate.
He's also the only Australian asylum seeker who's not going to end up in Nauru.
Look, I don't want to cast aspersions on the great country of Ecuador, but I don't know much about it. I've never been there. I have no plans to go there. But a friend of mine spent a month there learning Spanish, and when he came back, he could speak Spanish, and in broken English, explained to us that he spent most of his month in Ecuador learning Spanish and buying cocaine at $2 a gram. So I get the feeling that in Ecuador, because everyone has $2, they tell everybody everything. There's no secrets. I think Julian Assange will work out very well there.
I just had this vision of Julian inside the embassy digging. A Shawshank Redemption style. Slides down a sewer and comes up in the middle of our studio. Wouldn't that be amazing? It's unlikely.
Or like The Great Escape, he'll be in the attic trying to build a hang glider out of old cigarette tins.
With a tennis ball going like that.
I'm confused because apparently, you know, obviously the America is behind a lot of the anger against Julian Assange. And I don't know that Ecuador is a place because even though it's not on the books, I'm pretty sure the population of the American military cabal is pretty heavy in that area.
You think if he's trying to get away from...
It may not be, you know, like I said, official, but he may meet a few people that have some accents. He suddenly doesn't.
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday with Richard Glover.
We have Tom Ballard, Anthony Aykroyd and Tommy Dean and our wonderful audience. Thank you for coming. Now, the latest sports craze, unbelievably enough, in trendy Sydney is running backwards. There's hardly a park in the eastern suburbs which is not full of very strange people running backwards. What do you think of the craze, and how could you breathe new life into some other dull old sports just by changing one little thing about how they work, as in the direction? Anthony Aykroyd.
First, I want to check with the audience. Has anyone seen people running backwards? Yeah.
It's on, isn't it?
When radio hosts take up drugs, ladies and gentlemen. It's just... He's losing it. Now, I think a few...
It's just Richard going, yeah, this is normal. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, this man has never been to a posh city suburb and so has not seen it.
Now, a few simple changes. They began changing some of the sports already in the Olympics. Did you notice that? Steve Hooker, the pole vault?
You thought, why
go over the bar? Gee, I'll just have a walk under it. The archery, I think that could... Do you watch the archery on the Olympics? Those huge telescopic lenses? You know, that's not fair. May as well just have a 100-metre-long arrow. Why bother? I think they should have some Olympic volunteer there with an apple on their head. Blindfold the archer, you know, you want to be part of the experience. Here we go.
Britain has volunteered Julian Assange.
Yeah. Take your best shot. Rhythmic gymnastics, get rid of the rubber ball, use a bowling ball. If you miss it, strike! Instead of the baton, razor-sharp machetes. And the Roman rings, yeah, do the Roman rings, but over a pit of piranhas.
What are the Roman rings?
Oh, my God. Once an American, always an American, ladies and gentlemen. We know when you're running backwards. Yeah. No, the Olympics, those two rings where they do the things and they...
Sorry, I thought they were just called the rings. I didn't know they were Roman.
No, they're Roman.
Yeah. They roam around the real world every 4 years.
I thought they were rings. Okay, then.
Tommy, how would you change sports to make them more exciting? And what do you think of the craze of running backwards?
Well, running backwards, I believe... Pardon me, is probably my assumption at the moment, being that I'm an AFL ambassador. Sydney is just falling more and more in love with AFL, and they also love rules, so they want to be umpires. one of the great dances in life, I think, is watching a referee in the AFL run halfway across the field, and then suddenly, for no apparent reason, turn and jog at full speed backwards all the way to the square. Step, 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 complete.
Because they can. Yeah.
My other theory is that it's actually just a bunch of metrosexual men looking for the shower. Could be that.
Tom Ballard, what do you think of the craze?
I think it's fantastic. I think running backwards is great. There's been so many times when I've been going for a run and I'm sweating and I'm exhausted, I'm embarrassed about my body, and I just thought, I just wish I could be bleeding right now. I think that would be so much better.
As in running backwards.
Running backwards, hitting yourself. Yeah, okay, yeah. Fine, whatever. For you. I've been on the telly.
Richard's
I don't need this.
Here to explain our jokes, Tom.
Thank God. I wish he was here to make them as well. But I think we could improve a whole bunch of sports. I think walking can make that a bit more interesting, just sort of speeding it up a bit, kind of making it running. That might be interesting. Lawn bowls, forget lawn bowls, hot coals bowls. Yeah? Yeah, they have to stand on this. Yeah, they last that. Tennis, make the tennis ball a ticking time bomb, so you're constantly trying to get on the other side of the net. Cricket, I mean, this is tricky. I don't know how you can make cricket much more exciting. Maybe we could put a microphone right next to the oval so we can actually hear the grass grow. I think that would help the sport. And you should whack some sports together. You should like combine dressage with rodeo sports, yeah? So they're like riding a bull, but they have to land it and make it look pretty. Let me know.
Very good.
I like the idea of walking. If you walk sideways, like we got everybody walking sideways, not backwards, not forward. Walk sideways, and there'd be that much more room on the footpath.
Crab solution.
Not with the size of bellies you find in Bondi, but still. Now, we've got the TGIF Wheel of Death now. And as you know, when the audience, our lovely audience, comes in at 5 o'clock, they throw random topics onto this chocolate wheel. And today's topics include Big Brother, Sarah Murdoch.
A sailing-led economy.
Tony Abbott's sales pitch. Island holiday in the Pacific. Dating is slow in winter due to the cold. Inoculation. Nursing home sprinklers. Oh, innately funny. Clover. Rollerblading nuns. Anna Bligh, who's moving to Sydney. The Bledisloe Cup. Operating theatres. Psychotropic drugs. These are the topics of innate comedy potential. Suggested by our audience today.
Comedy gold.
Thanks for nothing. Tommy Dean.
Just so we're clear, at exactly 1:50 p.m. this afternoon, I completed a root canal therapy. So that's why I allowed a lot of these topics to go through, because they felt very much the comedic version of what I was going through in that chair. So why not just make it a full day of pain?
Okay, a pained and injured Tommy Dean now comes into the gladiatorial ring of fire for this. The Wheel of Death. And round and round and round it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. Which topic will Tommy Dean have to speak about? It is operating theatres, starting now.
Perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, entertainment has been, for so long, so predictable. It is time that we finally take the fun of being alive and possibly soon to be dead into the operating theatre.
Did they give you a big needle when you had the...
maybe I overstepped that mark right there. Well, I normally don't stop to talk about the way my thought process works, but in my head I was thinking, I'd go with the theater, entertainment, and suddenly, just as I said it there, it suddenly occurred to me that medical drama is a big part of our television diet. And any attempt to sort of, suggest that we need to use medical situations as entertainment has well and truly been established.
The Wheel of Death! Death!
Operating theater. Operating.
Which tooth was it?
It was... it was the upper right molar.
Upper right molar, yeah.
My fifth root canal. Very exciting.
Your fifth?
My fifth. Wow. My first operating theater. This is my favorite. I'll just tell you, this is my favorite story that ever happened in theater. operating theater. I was getting my wisdom teeth removed when I was 17 years old. And 17, and the dental hygienist, the dentist was a very classic sort of a dentist, but the hygienist was quite an attractive young woman. So we were getting in, full anesthesia, and then I'm going back under. The doctor makes me talk backwards from 10 to sort of, read how the anesthesia is affecting you. And, 10, 9, 8. Now, I'm out of a 3. I got to 3, and suddenly he throws this wrench into the works. He suddenly goes, "Hey, Tommy, what do you think of the hygienist? And the last thing I remember saying is, she has got great tits. And then boom, I black out. I wake up in extreme...
Which was her hitting you, right?
But I wake up in extreme pain, and then I still have this memory. And I say, maybe I didn't say it. Maybe the anesthesia. So I make my way out, and I have to pay the bill, of course. And now she's also the receptionist who you pay. And it's so embarrassing. I'm 17. I was quite awkward. And as I gave her my money, and she said, so, do you really think they're nice? I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know what to say.
So what are you, crazy? It was the drugs talking.
I did. It was madness. So anyway, that started. What I'm saying is that started a lifelong love of dental work. Yeah. And I have been trying to recapture that moment again and again and again. I actually, just eat candy and leave it on my teeth overnight, just to give me a reason to go back. It's a new dentist every week. One day I'm going to find a hygienist just like her. Life will be sweet again.
Tommy Dean survives the wheel of death just as that old 20. Memory comes floating back to his mind to save him from the fate of the gladiator. We have Tom Ballard, Anthony Aykroyd and Tommy Dean with us. Now, Puberty Blues on the television this week, displaying the rich language of 1970s Australia. Slack moles, spunk rats, and the pashing off of people who may or may not have been up themselves. What language do you speak? 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, or now? Which is the best language? And can you paint a picture of that world in your chosen language? Tom Ballard.
Well, okay, here we go. I had to write this out. I speak I speak like Gen Y speak, and it's totes like amazeballs, lol, ruffle, copter, OMG. And if anybody does something I'm like, I don't like, I'm like, unsubscribe. And if you're a rent, then for shizzle, I'd be frothing, not devo, if you got this chatted in your skull muscle or whatever and stuff. Thank you very much. Thank you.
He's a bit up himself, don't you reckon? Now, Anthony
Aykroyd.
What did
he say, Richard?
Anthony Aykroyd, you slack mole. Go for it.
Well, it's funny. This is true. For the first time in front of my children, I used the term pash off. So I was talking about One Direction that my daughter's crazy about, and I'd read the story. And said, oh, Harry pashed off someone. And she went, what? And her face, the disgust in her face at this term, pash off. As if I'd jumped out of the wardrobe naked in front of a friend's just wearing a fluorescent codpiece.
But enough on Saturday night.
That will never happen again. Oh, let's throw this open to the audience, because from what I've seen, some people here are pretty experienced at this. Because this is down to prepositions. There was pashed off. It was like, oh, yeah, pashed her off.
Yeah.
You have to say it in that sort of nasal voice. And then there's, oh, we pashed on for hours. So it could be on or off. So
that's right.
By show of hands, those who like to pash on. Those who like to pash off.
Pash off was more common.
And most of you aren't getting any action.
You sound like really? That sounds like some of the weird 70s Mr. Miyagi. Pash on.
Pash off.
Pash off.
Pash off.
So, Anthony, as far as you can work out, was there any difference between passing off and passing on?
Well,
was
I don't
the
know.
Act different in any way?
Well, there seemed to be an object in passing off, as you'd pass someone off, and was more inclusive. We passed on for hours. So uh-huh. I'd go with passing on.
There's quite a distinct difference if you put whack in there.
I'm sorry? Is this the root canal thing again?
No, I'm just saying it seems to be it's quite acceptable if you refer to somebody as, he's just whacking on. But you...
But the use of the combination
the
with the word off
suddenly is a much different proposition.
When Tommy saw the dental technician, he, whatever, that's fine. Yeah. Okay, oh gosh.
Yeah. Yep. So, other words from the... Do you speak 70s?
Well, this is weird, because this might be a Tasmanian thing, because I grew up in Tasmania, ladies and gentlemen. It's hard to imagine. But we used to call like a Westie or a Bogan a cog. Has anyone heard this term?
Cog. No.
That's what I found out when I moved to Sydney. And I said, I was trying to be cool in front of people and said, oh, he's a real cog. And they went, what the hell are you talking about? And also I went to a Catholic school, and if you turned up in white socks for some reason, people go, oh, woofter, woofter, white socks. What's wrong with white socks? What's wrong with woofters? And, what the Christian Brothers may have worn... Oh, Josh is going for it over there. But I think he's retrieving some memories. But so weird Tasmanian terms like that. And the Christian Brothers, I don't know if they wore socks or underwear, but
they were,
could have been cogs.
I was trying to figure that. I can't work out if there's a decade of my word choice, or a lot of it. You know, I sort of sometimes still fall in between the cracks between a American word choice and an Australian word choice. I haven't really been able to identify. I was thinking about it all day, thinking about what terms do I use. The only one I can really think of, and this would be American, definitely American 80s, is awesome. Mm-hmm. And a thing only has to be okay. I think that's the mistake. I think you overestimate what we mean when we say something is awesome. Awesome is our way of saying yeah.
Actually, I just remembered this is a true story. I don't know if it'd be funny or not, but I remember this girl.
Why start now?
Why start worrying about it now? But this is, you know, my 30s. And this girl said, oh, last night I really cracked a fat. I said, I'm sorry? She said, I just went wild, I cracked a fat. And I said, I don't think that means what you think it means. And she meant she'd pigged out on food.
She doesn't speak 70s. She just doesn't speak 70s.
And she showers forwards as well, I'm sure.
The way Americans over inflate everything, so everything is awesome. And you ask them, how are you? And they say, I am so terrific. And you find out later that, you know, they've actually been sacked from their job, they've been divorced the day before.
Yeah, I'm terrific, awesome, amazing. We like to start with superlatives and work up from there.
Because Australians are the absolute opposite. The better something is, we downplay it. So if somebody is our absolute best friend, you say, he's all right.
He's all right?
He's all right. Well, if someone is a total, total idiot who you hate to death, you say, oh, he's a bit of a bastard.
Yeah. And
your best friend is a total bastard.
Yeah, that's right.
I quite enjoyed the slip when I got here, because the other one, and this is my favorite actually differentiation, is in Australia, of course, you say no worries. I think no worries isn't much more honest. We say no problem. No problem. But that makes people angry, because there is a problem. That's why the tradesman is here. We have a problem. No worries admits there is a problem. We simply don't have to worry about it because we'll eventually solve it. That's
what?
My favorite.
Tommy,
language.
Why do Americans say, oh, I could care less? Because shouldn't they say, I couldn't care less?
No, because that's negative. It's negative if you got to the point where we like to say, so when you say, I could care less, we're saying that we're not that interested in the problem. But, you know, we do care a little bit.
Why do you say...
We're not complete bastards.
Since we're attacking Tommy...
Since we've got one here.
Since we've got a live one here. Why don't you say maths? Why do you say math? Are you so busy?
Yeah.
Are you so busy you can't find time for the S?
I think that because we have a sibilance problem in America. I myself have a lateral S problem, and I think it's just mean to make people... Math. Because when I tried to do math in the sixth grade... I was quite terrible at it.
Why can't you people?
And because why do we have to do all those different kinds of maths at once? There's one math.
Okay, I've got another one for you. Mm-hmm. Why is the main course called the entree? What's it an entree to?
Look, I think you're missing the fact that once you move to a meal program that includes 7 to 10 full meals a day, you just got to, you know, the entree is to the next meal.
Yeah. It's an entree to a lifetime of obesity.
I think French, we don't know languages very well. An entree, obviously, has French derivations or origins, and we didn't know what it meant. Yeah. I think we try to pretend, you know.
It is true that the Americans
aren't the entree. That sounds great.
It is true the Americans aren't very good with French. Quote George W. Great quotes from George W. Bush. The French don't even have a word for entrepreneur. True story. True story.
Yeah. The hors d'oeuvres. We have hors d'oeuvres. Mm. Hors d'oeuvres. Mm. We have those. I think that's our entree, so to speak. So you have your hors d'oeuvres.
Why can't you Americans...
They're called horses doovers.
Or your appetizers. No, we have appetizers. We have appetizers. So you have your appetizer.
Yes,
that's your starter. You know, your little appetizer is your entree.
As if you need an...
Or your main. Now I'm confused again. What are we having? Appetizer is like, you know, the spring roll. It's a little small snack. And then we have the entree, which is your main. And then we have the dessert, which is your dessert.
Yeah.
And then we have lunch. I don't know what you have at that point.
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday with Richard Glover.
Tom Ballard, Anthony Aykroyd, Tommy Dean, and our wonderful audience. Thank you. Yay! Now, Dick Smith this week published his own magazine, Dick Smith's Magazine of Forbidden Ideas. Did you see this in the newspaper? It had lots of photos of Dick and articles about Dick's causes, population growth, buying Australian, and how Rupert Murdoch hates him. There's nothing like a spat between billionaires, is there? Now, if other celebs published their own magazines, what would the titles be and what would be the content? Tommy Dean.
Well, this has already been done, of course. I love the idea. Oprah, I think, started this whole celebrity magazine business. And I love the fact that, you know, she just called the magazine O, but each month the O was a different font size, bigger or smaller, depending on how she was looking that week. Offset. Thought that was fantastic. Little subtle font play up in the corner there.
Is that a circle? Oh, man.
Yeah, wow. No. And
pretty
Justin
sure
Bieber,
that's fontist.
Yeah. Now my Justin Bieber has his own magazine now. All right. I'm really quite... I find that the whole idea of like new
See,
ideas.
See, I thought Beaver Magazine was quite different.
I don't know if this is my age or my lack of interest in other people, but there is just no celebrity I can think of that in any way justifies a monthly update to their doings, goings, ons, and thoughts. I can't see it. You know, I'd love to. I'm imagining, you know, you think of all the rude jokes, and well, I'd buy the Danny Minogue magazine, you know, with my unknown talents, secret sealed section, not included. You know, or the Kyle Sandilands magazine, where it's like just a pop up magazine, and each month just opens it up and he says some rude thing and spits on you.
Anthony Aykroyd, which celeb magazine?
I think Kevin Rudd should have his own magazine called Kevin's Parallel Universe, where he's still leader. you could have one of his children's books serialized, couldn't you? That'd be lovely. Maybe his new book, The Excruciatingly Painful Death of the Evil Red Witch and the Return of the Golden-Haired King. I'd like to see Nick Darcy with his own magazine, The Bankrupt's Travel Guide. See the world with bikini babes while glorifying weapons of death on $0 or less per year. And the Aussie Olympic team cooking book called Anyone for Seconds.
Tom Ballard, what magazines are you going to be buying in the newsagent?
I've kind of gone with the angle of other billionaires with their own magazines. I think if Bill Gates had a magazine, it'd just keep crashing. You get frustrated, you end up buying the Steve Jobs magazine instead. Gina Reinhardt has a magazine. It's called the Sydney Morning Herald. I'm not sure. Know that?
That's a Sydney Mining Herald.
Donald Trump, I'd like to see Donald Trump with his own magazine. You know, just a series of shots of different wigs he can buy. American Heads with Un-American Hair, I thought was the title. And Clive Palmer's had a magazine, been posted for years actually. It's called Mad Magazine. I don't know. Yeah. What are you feeling sorry for Clive Palmer? Are you all
billionaires? Weird reactions today.
Yeah.
Where is the leftist leaning ABC audiences?
I was told they'd be communists here, Richard.
I know. We could have a Julian Assange magazine, but it would be kind of like a Where's Waldo book.
Who were the winners and losers of this week? Tommy Dean.
The big winner this week, please, we've got to get back on the track, of course, and this is in my role as ambassador of the Sydney Swans.
Yeah.
But this Sunday, 2 p.m., we come back onto the winning trail against the Western Bulldogs. Very excited. Very excited about that. And so are they. All those people out there in Centennial Park running backwards, celebrate with me! The red and white is back in town. And the loser this week is my current dental hygienist. So poorly proportioned. I just don't know how I can go back to get the crown I need.
As Richard would say, the chess puppies.
chess puppies. Oh, and winners and losers, who were they, Anthony?
Well, my loser is I don't know if you read this story, a U.S. moviegoer who took his gun with him to the Bourne Legacy to see the movie, and it fell out of his pocket and he shot himself in the buttock. I think that'd make you a loser, wouldn't it? How was the movie? I was going great until I shot myself in the arse. But he's also the winner. You know why? Because he shot himself in the bottom And it's reported that instead of just running out for medical treatment, he stood up and said, I want to apologise to everyone for disrupting the movie. Then I think that's grace under pressure.
Very polite, isn't it?
Yeah, then he sat down on one
mobile
buttock.
Phones.
Just so we're clear, if he's a standard American size, that is not a hard shot. If you're thinking, it's wow, that's a weird target. It's Tom, replaced the side of a barn.
Tom Ballard, winners and losers.
My winner is the South Korean soccer team. I don't know if you've heard about this, but they've returned home. Because they won bronze at the Olympics, they don't have to go into the army. They're not going to be conscripted, which is a pretty sweet win. But it's winning for them. It's a loss for the South Korean army, though, I think, because what you need in an army is a bunch of men who fall over crying when they get nudged in the shins. That's who you want. Yeah. My loser is Pussy Riot, the Russian punk band, still being held in custody because of their protest songs. Although out of that, the winners of that are thousands and thousands of 14-year-old boys across the world who are able to Google the phrase Pussy Riot and claim they're just keeping up with the news.
Very interested in Vladimir Putin, they are.
Yes, it's political. It's an important issue.
Now, an SBS program this
just
week...
thinking, Richard, four of us could form a boy band called Cockfight.
We'll work
on fantastic.
An SBS program this week about disciplining children and how different migrant communities have different methods of keeping children in line, from parental scorn right through to smacking. What methods did your parents use, and what do you think is the best method for making children do what they're told? Tom Ballard.
Well, I was pretty good. I was pretty well behaved. My parents never really did anything. They didn't smack me or take things away from me. They just sort of let me learn my own lessons, you know. And when I eventually emerged from the basement at the age of 21, I was ready for anything, you know. Once you get used to natural light, it's really not too bad. But I think if you really want to make your kids behave, what you should do is you tell them there's a big, scary monster who's everywhere, is always looking at you, and if you do something wrong, he's going to catch you and he's going to put you in a really scary, hot place. And if you're really lucky, your children may turn out to be priests.
Anthony Aykroyd.
Well, my dad was a very giving man. Not in the traditional sense, you know. That was his kind of reprimand. He'd say, oh, can I watch some more TV? I'll give you TV. Oh, Dad, I'm going to be late. Can I have a lift to school? I'll give you school. So we used to try and trick him and say, can I have some lollies? I'll give you lollies. No, I won't, you cheeky little bastard. And Mum's weapon was her omniscience. She seemed to know everything about us, and it was that she had an informant. So, a little bird told me that you were a bit late to school. Who is this bird? But I think bribery is the best method for raising kids. It worked on my kids. If you clean your room, son, I'll give you a big chocolate Freddo. I'm 18, Dad. Copy of Penthouse from 1975. I'll take the Freddo.
Tommy Dean.
My dad was very laissez-faire. His form of discipline was, you're going to have to talk to your mum about that. And mom's weapon of choice was the wooden spoon. We didn't have it wielded against us very often, and we had learned very early that this was her weapon of choice, and well, we conspired as children, as four of us, to hide the long ones, because that gave her leverage, and reach. So she was reduced down to her tiniest wooden spoons. We sort of reduced it really to like a punch, more than a spank, but she had no reach. She was a tiny woman, like a little pterodactyl.
Yeah, I've met your mom. She's quite short.
Yeah, so she couldn't reach us with the tiny spoons. It was more the threat. But what was nice about it is that she was also an excellent cook, so you didn't want to take all the wooden spoons because she really made some delightful desserts. And you know, you like to have those before lunch, so it was good. She was more of a threat, though. I mean, to be fair, just to be fair, she didn't like beat us like crazy, but you know, she was a country woman, and country women. My grandmother was probably more torturous because we had an old willow tree, and when she wanted to spank you, which is more common... You had to go tear a switch off the branch. You had to pick your weapon.
You had to pick your own weapon.
It was like that. And that, by the way, was where we learned the secret of leverage to use against our mother and her wooden spoon brigade. Was you learned the long switch. Because the first one, this is long and thin, and she couldn't possibly hurt you with this. So to that end, you know, all my brothers, we know a lot about physics.
Yeah. But you could have also, neighbours could have told the level of crime of the Dean children by how many switches were left on the tree. If the willow was stripped bare.
But I think the entire, there was a lot of, we kind of lived in the neighborhood. It was a very country, rural, you know, farming community, but everybody kind of lived in blocks of areas that were near their relatives, and everybody was referred to as, you know, like a gang. Oh, you're one of the Dean boys, aren't you? You one of the Dean boys? And one of my great memories is coming up years after I've gone back. My grandfather sees me out there. You one of them Kelsler boys? You one of the Kelsler boys? No, Grandpa, it's me. It's Tommy. Who? Tommy. I hear my grandmother. Jesus, Arch, it's Donna's boy. Oh, you're one of the Dean boys.
Well, please thank one of the Dean boys, Tom Ballard and Anthony Aykroyd. Next week, Colin Buchanan, Tommy and Subby. Thank God it's Friday. It's 6 o'clock.